And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I think the last week, the week that we've just been through, Donald Trump must consider was the worst week that he's had as president of the United States. After all, COVID-19 was resurgent in the very places who adopted the policy that he promoted of getting the economy started. Texas, Arizona, Florida, cases surged forward. Another 1.5 million workers lost their jobs. We're up to now more than 41 million people under his had their jobs destroyed under his because of his policies. The stock market crashed on Tuesday or Wednesday, 1,800 points in one day when investors suddenly realized that COVID-19 was resurgent because Trump's policies were being followed. He scheduled a rally for the 19th of June in Tulsa because he didn't know, he's such an idiot and so ignorant, he didn't know that this was an important political day in the calendar for all anti-racists because it marks the official end of slavery. And so he had to postpone the rally and push it to another case, another date. In the Michael Flynn case, he suffered a staggering setback, which you can explain. General Milley, the Joint Chiefs of Staff head, apologized for following his instructions. And the rebellion against racism is not dying down. It's continuing in city after city after city. We had several hundred people in Honesdale, in our area, demonstrating. Honesdale, if you can imagine that. Some period, huh? Some week.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of reminded a couple weeks ago, my son and I watched on TV, we watched the movie Animal House, you know, which is, Animal House was a complete disaster on campus. And of course, things only got worse. The guys, they failed their tests. They were being expelled from the campus. They were being beaten up by their opponents in the fraternity world and everything. So, what did they do? Road trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Trump came up with.
Yeah.
We're going to Tulsa,
right?
On this thing. Of course, the supreme irony is that in order to get a ticket to this event, you have to sign a waiver saying that if you get sick or if you die, that neither you nor your heirs can sue the Trump people for causing this, because they're not going to have masks or impose any of the restrictions that Dr. Fauci or Dr. Birx or everybody should have.
Wouldn't you think that that would be, I wouldn't say a tip-off or a giveaway, but wouldn't you think that the Trumpniks would look at that and say, maybe we shouldn't go?
No. They look at this, you know, they say, this isn't going to matter because nothing's going to happen to me. And, of course, that's what all the people in those states that you mentioned said nothing was going to happen to them. And now everything that 2 weeks after they started opening up or had rallies and stuff like that, the numbers are spiking. You throw Missouri in there. Remember that gathering at the Lake of the Ozarks?
That's right. That's right.
And things like that.
Excuse me. You can throw Susquehanna County into that. We have a situation up here in our county. There's a speedway. The owners of the speedway, three weeks ago, decided to reopen despite all the rules. And they sponsored a race. And despite the fact that the local government came down and told them, don't do it, it's against the rules, you're going to put people in danger. The cops came, said, don't do it, you're going to put people in danger. They told everybody, we got enough guys with rednecks with guns here. There's a quote. We got enough rednecks with guns here that if you try to mess with us, we'll stop you. And they ran the race. 3,000 or 2,700 people allegedly came. We have a nursing home right a couple of miles away from that place, a bunch of people from the nursing home went to the race. The nursing home spiked in cases 2 weeks later. The whole county is prevented from going from the lower category to a better category in terms of removing itself from the restrictions because of the spike in cases in that one nursing home. Did that race cause the spike? Well, it's coincidental. Nothing else happened, and there was that spike in that place. So wherever Trump's policies are followed, there's a disaster for the people who follow the policies. It's just that simple.
You know, there's something else. I keep mentioning Animal House. There's that line in there, did the Americans give up when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? and two of the frat brothers look at Butarsky, and one says to the other, you know, Germans? And the other guy says, shut up, he's on a roll. That's kind of what you see with Trump over this rally that he's going to have. He scheduled it for Juneteenth.
He changed it
this weekend to the 20th after someone kind of filled him in. He has no sense of history. But I actually want to move a little bit from no sense of history to being on the wrong side of history. And if you remember, a few years back, things changed in an incredibly swift amount of time with regard to LGBT rights, BTQ rights, however you want to list them. And America moved extremely fast in terms of anti-discrimination and gay marriage and stuff like that. It was one of the most rapid changes that we've seen politically on something that really is a core issue. And I think we're starting to see that, at least with the racial situation, which has lagged way, way longer than it should have, and the discrimination. But we have these things now where Confederate statues are coming down all over the place. Traitors to the country are now being called traitors instead of heroes or whatever. Trump's still trying to call them, you know, part of history, or he almost called them winners.
He did call them winners. He said, this is part of our part of the heritage of America that makes us winners.
Yeah. And of course, they were the losers of history. And it's become obvious. We had that issue now where Trump is standing in the way of renaming Army installations and what the Navy wants to do in terms of getting rid of the names of Confederates and Confederate generals. It is on the wrong side of history in that. We've seen NASCAR now. I mean, if there anything else that you can imagine, NASCAR banning the Confederate flag.
Wait a minute, before you get to NASCAR, it's really funny because he especially picked out Fort Bragg, which is named after a total incompetent who...
Braxton Bragg,
who everyone who's a military historian considers to be the single most incompetent strategically and incompetent and tactically major officer who ever served in any army in the United States. That's the guy whose reputation he's defending, Braxton Bragg. Forget his politics. If all you're talking about is his military prowess, this guy, you know, should have stayed a shoemaker. So, anyway, sorry to interrupt you, but it's just...
No. But these things, this change is going to come. The only question is whether he's going to make an about-face and embrace it and start...
No, he can't make an about-face about this.
The names himself, or is he going to let Joe Biden decide on the names if there's a Biden presidency?
Well, he said that he would veto the defense appropriation bill if part of that bill was a requirement to rename the bases. So he's really staked his position on this. What he's saying is, I will not let the Army continue. I won't give you any money if you want to rename these bases. I don't see how he can back down from that.
Well, we'll see on that, but it's That's something that I think people are starting to understand. You know, after the murders in Charleston, South Carolina, in the church there, Nikki Haley, I thought, did a pretty good job, and she was able to take down some of the Confederate statues, and there was that movement to take the Confederate battle flag out of state places. I mean, she's since deteriorated in her political positioning there, but you know, these other statues all survived that movement at that time. Now the people have tended to take it in their own hands. They're toppling statues and whatever. I remember, I want to throw this in.
You know, it's interesting because the racists argue you can't take these statues down because it's part of our history, part of our heritage. Yeah. Well, if you're an African American, that's part of your history and part of your heritage, is opposing these statues, opposing what the statues stood for. Why is it that their heritage should be denigrated, but the heritage of the people who enslaved them, who oppressed them, and who rebelled against the country to do so, that heritage should be maintained? I don't quite get the argument.
Benedict Arnold's part of our heritage. We don't have statues to him.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It was a history of people who said that America was no longer their country.
Yeah.
That the Confederacy was their country. It wasn't our country.
That's right.
And the inability to, you know, even discern things. They talk about, well, what about Washington or Jefferson? But those men at least created our country. They gave us the opportunity. Madison gave us the Constitution, Jefferson the Declaration. They gave us the opportunity to grow. These people were out to destroy that and to remove those opportunities. You know, and something else I started to say, a number of years ago, I took my family down to Washington, D.C., and we took a tour of the Capitol. And you go into Statuary Hall there, where they and there's a lot of interviews that are done in and around there. And
yeah, just explain to people who have never been there what you're talking about.
Well, there are, in the Capitol of the United States, there are places where they have statues of prominent Americans, and Statuary Hall is a place where each state gets to nominate two people to have statues that represent their state or mean something to their state. And I looked around, and I was absolutely stunned to see that Jefferson Davis is one of those statues from Mississippi. Now, he was a senator from Mississippi before the Civil War, but he became the president of the Confederacy. But he's there, and there are a number of other Confederates there. I'm waiting to see what happens, whether those things get removed as well.
I don't know what the history of that, of putting those statues is, but I do know that the history of naming these military camps stems from the darkest period of the segregationist era in American history. In other words, this naming of these camps, this was not done by Ulysses Grant. This was not done in the aftermath of the war to bring the country together. This was done in the 1890s by the newly reestablished racist regimes to celebrate and to memorialize the fact that they were back in power. This is a celebration of racism. That's the reason those camps were named those names.
Well, yeah, and this is the that part of that movement of the lost cause. And
exactly.
And what happened.
Exactly.
And it moved on. And people, a lot of people don't have any idea as to how ingrained this became. You know, a lot of the monuments that went on in the States were done in the early 20th century or then in the 50s and 60s as opposition to the civil rights movement, to let people of color know exactly who was really in charge.
Yeah, what your place is.
But I can remember, I knew somebody in high school that had grown up in South Carolina, and she told me that back then, and this was in the 60s, that the Civil War was known as the War of Northern Aggression.
Right.
I mean, that's how their history explained those things.
Right. Right.
When they fired on Fort Sumter, you know, it was the North there taking all those shells that was aggressing, I guess. But
you can expect this from Trump. His father, after all, was a member of the Klan.
Yeah.
We have photos of his father in a Klan uniform. So, you know, basically we have a Klansman as president.
And we have sympathizers for the John Birch Society and things like that.
Despite this, the anti-racist rebellion continues, grows stronger. And as you were starting to point out when I interrupted you, even NASCAR has had to decide that they will not allow the display of Confederate flags. And that led at least one NASCAR competitor to say, well, if I can't be a racist, I'm not racing. Guess what? Don't race. Who needs you?
Don't race. Sayonara.
Yeah.
And it's a cultural thing. If you remember, there was the TV show, The Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
With the General Lee was their car with the flag on it, and when he blew the horn, it played Dixie.
Yeah.
And people all thought it was funny and lighthearted and whatever, the caricatures, as if the Confederacy was some benign thing to be celebrated rather than scorned. We're talking about people who are traitors to the country, and this week you mentioned it. We had some situation going on with General Flynn.
Ah, yes.
Who was
another defeat for Trump? Another big defeat for Trump.
Yeah, a traitor to his country. He was dealing with the Russians, and he was dealing with the secretly with the Turks, and things like that. And he took a guilty plea. He got a pretty sweetheart deal, and because of his fear of being locked up, you know, he was willing to lock up Hillary Clinton, who wasn't charged with any crimes, but he doesn't want to go to jail, and he's trying to find every way to weasel out of it.
Although he conceded he was guilty.
Conceded he was guilty. And then Bill Barr comes along and does a political move, which is to say that he doesn't want to make Trump have to pardon Flynn, because Trump is going to do that. Remember, the whole affair over Comey was about not going after General Flynn. You wonder what General Flynn has on Trump. But anyhow, Barr said, we're going to drop the prosecution, even though the guy said he's guilty. And the judge said, not so fast, Judge Sullivan. He said, this doesn't make any sense, and you can only do it with my permission. And there's been all sorts of pressure on the judge. So the judge said, I'm going to appoint someone else, a former judge, to look into this. And that judge, by the name of Gleason, came out this week with a 73-page report. It was absolutely scathing. Tearing apart the Justice Department, saying that their reasoning had no basis in law or in fact, that it was just merely a political stance that they were taking, and that Judge Sullivan should not drop the charges based on what the Justice Department wants to say. He also went on to say that whether or not that they should hold General Flynn in contempt of court for lying to the court, in effect, saying I'm guilty when I'm not guilty, or whatever, however you want to say it. He said that should only be considered in sentencing. And then the Justice Department had appealed, trying to take the case out of Judge Sullivan's hands. They appealed to the D.C. Circuit, saying the judge has no discretion here. He just should issue an order, like a three-line order, case dismissed. And they heard arguments, and those arguments did not go well for the Trump administration. Basically, the judges there, including a Trump appointee and a Bush appointee, said, why is this here now? The judge hasn't even made his decision. There's no real reason for us to consider it. It's within the discretion of the judge. We'll have to wait and see what the judge wrote. Although one of the judges who heard this took exception to the Gleason report. So the case isn't over yet. But ultimately what's going to happen is Trump is going to have to pardon Flynn, take the political hit if there is any. But Trump has indicated he's going to do that and also pardon Roger Stone as well.
Can Trump pardon himself?
That's a question that scholars have debated. He may be able to.
But not for state crimes, only for federal
crimes. For state crimes. That's correct. And he's still got problems in state crimes. We're going to find out either this week or next week, by the way, on whether or not Trump's tax returns have to be turned over, A, to Congress, and B, to the people in New York State who are investigating him for possibly fraud, tax fraud. Because that decision is due. The court session ends in June, so that's one of the cases that's out there and it's coming up. We're talking about down south. There's three things down south that we should talk about. One is North Carolina, where they were going to have the GOP convention, and the governor said you have to adhere to safety standards because of the virus. And Trump says, we're not going to do that. We're going to pull out. Turns out they're going to pull out partly from North Carolina. They may keep deciding the platform there, but they're going to have Trump's acceptance speech in Jacksonville and whatever show.
So presumably the delegates won't bother to go to Charlotte. They'll just go to Jacksonville.
Yeah, or only a handful are going to go to Charlotte. Now, North Carolina has a senatorial election. And that's one of the senators that's in big trouble, Republican Senator Tom Tillis. And he put out a new round of ads this week in which he doesn't mention Trump. You know, heretofore, everybody in the Republican Party, including the congressional races we had up here, were all talking about how great Trump was and how close they are to him. And all of a sudden, Tillis is moving away from Trump, which gives you an idea.
Don't you regard that as a very, very significant development?
Yeah, it is. And doesn't bode well for Tillis, and it may not bode well for Trump in North Carolina. There's a shot that that state could flip from red to blue, despite all of the gerrymandering and whatever. You can't gerrymander a presidential election.
Do you think Art Pope is allied with Tillis in this? Art Pope, the guy who bankrolled the Republican takeover of North Carolina and who is one of the chief bankrollers of the Republican Party.
Well, we'll have to say. I don't know the who's... I'm sure Pope's got his money where his desire is somewhere in the background. We'll have to find out.
But this is just another fracturing of the Trump wall, I guess you'd call it, right?
Yeah. The other place was Georgia, where they had an election this week that turned into a debacle because of the fact that the machines didn't work. And they didn't have enough, and people were in long lines, things like that. This is a place where we know from the Stacey Kemp election that there's been all sorts of shenanigans to suppress the Democratic vote. And things weren't that suppressed to the extent that they have two senators up for re-election this year, or up for election this year, because one resigned. And Jonathan Ostroff, who had run for Congress once, he emerged from a crowded field with over 50% of the votes. So he's clean now to run against Senator Perdue, who's had some troubles down there. And that's going to be interesting. And then the other election is the Isaacson seat. Isaacson resigned because of health reasons. And we're going to have to see how...
That's where Kathy Loeffler is the...
Kathy
Loeffler,
the
famous person who traded on Inside Knowledge, saying, well, she does that all the time. What's the big deal?
Yeah, and whether... there's a question as to whether she or Phil Collins is going to actually be able to take on the Democrat there, Collins being highly pro-Trump. So we're going to have to see.
I mean, Georgia is not a Democrat. It strikes me that Georgia represents an example for the Trump forces throughout the country. If you can tie up the vote, if you can bollocks up the mechanism, people will go home and they won't bother to vote. And if fewer people vote, you win. So why is that a defeat? To me, that's a technique for winning if you're a Trump.
I think it happened too soon. I think if it happens in the primary, they have a chance to correct it, and there's going to be a lot of pressure to correct it. If it had happened in the general, they wouldn't have that opportunity. And we're seeing that the public's mood on this is, we got to correct this. Remember when way back when, at the beginning of this year, it seems like years ago, with the Democrats, the first thing with the Iowa caucuses, and they were a mess.
Yeah.
They were an absolute disaster. And everybody said, well, how do you have the how can you vote for a Democrat? They can't even run a caucus.
Yeah.
Well, now you have the exact same situation in Georgia, where it's the Republicans running the show, and Governor Kemp and the Secretary of State. And obviously they can't run an election. So, but you don't hear the same arguments made against them.
Well, isn't it the case that Kemp purged 300,000 voters from the rolls in the election that he was at the same time he was running? He was both the administrator of the election and a candidate in the election. In Pennsylvania, that's against the law. And he got 300,000 people off the rolls, almost all of them in black and other neighborhoods where Democrats live. And what did he win by? 38,000 votes, right?
Yeah. And this happened in Wisconsin as well and other places. So it's something to watch. And of course, Stacey Abrams came out of this and said, I'm going to run an organization that's going to come up with ways to try to negate these suppressions and get us an honest vote and get people registered. We'll have to see how well she does on that there. I wanted to mention two other things that came up. One is this defund the police issue. Wording is very bad. There's no question that there have to be major reforms, and people are talking about major reforms. As I said, on the wrong side of history, even Republicans now realizing that when people see the cameras and see what actually goes on, that they demand better policing and more honest policing. There have been all sorts of things that we've seen now. A young man, we saw another young man killed that had been, the video had been suppressed for a long time. We saw the police lounging in Senate, in Representative, was it Bobby Seale in Chicago, his office, while riots were going on outside, taking things like that. So those efforts, but they have to use a different word than defund. That's something that scares people. Scares independents, even though they don't really mean totally defund. They mean to reallocate the money and to do things smarter, not just by force.
What they really mean is, if you need social workers, police aren't social workers. Social workers are social workers. If you need psychologists, hire psychologists.
Right.
Don't put people in jail to get psychological treatment and so forth.
A lot of police work is because of mental illness.
Yeah.
And we don't address mental illness very well in this country. So that thing is out there. And the other thing I wanted to mention is we got word this week that John Bolton is finally going to publish his book on June 23rd, I guess with or without permission of the White House, and he's given hints as to what he's going to say. Now, of course, everybody is saying he kind of blew his opportunity, his window of opportunity to say it was back when the impeachment was going on. People are saying, don't buy his book, just read the excerpts somewhere else. But we don't know how extensive those revelations are going to be. They're going to talk about the Ukraine. He's going to talk about other foreign policy things that he said were decisions were only made to make Trump's reelection possible. But we don't know if there's anything else in there. There might be other shoes to drop that Bolton saw while he was in the White House.
I tell you what, we do know that President Donald Trump said that the demonstrators in Washington were handled thanks to the wonderful efforts of the SS. Remember that? SS, which everybody in the world knows means the Nazi Extermination Corps.
Yeah.
Trump said, I used the wrong word.
Yeah, he meant Secret Service or whatever, the wrong abbreviation.
Yeah.
We'll see. But we have to see whether, Bolton's book, whether anybody else is going to come out from that administration before the election and say other things about what they really know on the inside of that White House. I haven't heard anything.
We'll see it next week if we see it.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. See you next week. We're done today. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.